Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
We are Mediocrity. The podcast is just okay. We're not great, we're not fantastic, but we're not terrible either. We are just simply Mediocrity, part of the Multimedia Men podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Boomstick Comics. I'm Brian Kluger, and I am joined by every day, always, every night, too, Jonathan Atterbury. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I don't know.
Every day and every night.
Every day and
every time.
All day and all of the night. You're wearing it. You got to describe to our listeners the shirt you're wearing right now and what I had to say about it.
Oh, what you and my niece had to say about it. So I got this great it's a button down shirt from Chubby's. It's the name of the brand. And it's just the most garish shirt I've ever seen in my life. And that's why I had to buy it. It's neon. It's covered in multicolored pineapples. And there's like flowers and stuff like that in it, too. And both Brian and my 4-year-old niece looked at the shirt and said, "It looks like a SpongeBob shirt." And they are correct.
They are correct.
I look at it and think it looks like a Weird Al shirt. But, you know, same difference.
Oh, how's New American Fitness going?
New American Fitness is good. The book, Powerful Mind, Powerful Body, is almost ready for print on Amazon. It's been on the ebook form on Amazon for a while now, but the print version is coming out on Amazon shortly.
So if there is a whole cheesecake covered in like chocolate chips and I want to eat it all, what should I do?
I would suggest going for a workout before.
Okay, going for a workout before.
Only because that will help you build up an appetite, enabling you to eat said cheesecake.
Okay.
If that is the goal.
Good. And always our returning champion of comics and art, Jeremy Maygard. How's it going, buddy?
It's good, man. How about you?
Doing all right. There's a comic show coming up. You're going to be there. What's the latest?
I will be there.
What's the latest on that? What's the latest on your own book? What are you going to be selling there?
It's the Fan Expo Dallas show. It's the kind of like biggest con of the year for the area. My booth is going to be in Artist Alley. It's booth A77. And I'm going to have all 3 issues of Primal Instinct. I'm going to have a couple new prints that I made. I'm going to have original pages from the book for sale. And then I'll be doing sketches and, you know, commissions, all that kind of fun stuff as well, too.
What is the craziest commission you've ever been asked to perform or draw? Or like the weirdest, like the strangest, weirdest one?
I haven't really had anything super weird. Probably the oddest was a guy brought me a Transformers comic, and he wanted me to draw Nicholas Wilde from Zootopia on the front of a Transformers comic, but he wanted him wearing a Megatron helmet. But he even had a specific Megatron helmet in mind. Like it was, there was a model of this Megatron helmet. And he gave me the specific model that he wanted, and I was like, "No way, dude! I was like, it's just gonna take forever."
Wow!
I would have to design a Megatron head and like blend it with cartoon Fox Nick Wilde head, because I was like, "How are you even gonna know Nick Wilde is what's underneath that helmet?"
Yeah, seriously, that's what I was gonna ask. Is like, so would you not? Would you be able to know it was the fox?
I would have to basically draw a like gigantic robot fox Megatron head. I was like, that would take me like 2 or 3 days to design that. I thought, like, I can't do that at a convention.
Oh, well, next time, just have him pay you up front, and you get his, and then you get his mailing address, and you ship it to him whenever. Tell him it's 6 months out. Wait.
Yeah, right.
Thousands. That's pretty funny. All right. So everybody's doing well. I think this is episode 32. So we've been here 32 weeks. We are excited about it. And we have a good show for you today. We're going to talk about the upcoming films of possibly the remake of The Matrix, The Batman with Ben Affleck, Tron. And we're going to talk about Iron Fist. And we are going to see what actors would play us in real life, I guess, which sounds like fun. I can't wait to share our choices with you, because we don't know either one yet. We don't know who's picked who yet. I have a feeling about mine. So
yeah, and we'll have to vote at the end and see which ones we've decided the best answers.
Yes, but you guys are crazy. But let's get
in. And did you say we're doing Kevin? And we're doing Kevin and Dwayne today too.
Oh yeah, we're definitely doing Kevin. That's a returning segment. Yes, we've got to do a Kevin.
But which topic are we doing? Because I didn't prepare anything.
Whatever.
There's no.
We're not doing limitations on the whole Kevin and Dwayne thing. It's whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Whatever you want.
All right,
want
that's
to be.
Fair.
All right, good.
You're a free spirit.
So that'll be you. So let's start off the podcast with a little bit of unfortunate news. We lost an excellent, legendary, iconic artist, Bernie Wrightston. He was born in 1948, and he died this past week, and actually died yesterday. And he was like the leading guy. He's one of the co-creators of the Swamp Thing, and he did a lot of Frankenstein art. He did Creepshow stuff. Like, if you've seen like Stephen King's Creepshow movies or the cover art to any of those posters or anything, or some of the Stephen King novels, he was the guy responsible for all that artwork. He's amazing. Jeremy, I know you probably know more about him, but are you sad to see this guy go? How did he influence you as well?
Super sad. He was one of the guys that always kind of inspired me for the monster drawings, and is a large part of I've always like dug the classic monster stuff, as you guys know, but he was one of the guys that's like, it's like he's one of the reasons why there were werewolves and stuff like that in Space Beards and that kind of thing. And, you know, he even did he did the comic adaptation for Cycle of the Werewolf, which became the Silver Bullet movie, you know.
Right.
Which, if you're a hardcore Stephen King fan, you'll recognize that one too. But, you know, I mean, he did.
Or a hardcore Gary Busey fan.
Oh, see, in that, I haven't seen it in so long.
Yeah, he's the crazy uncle that makes the rocket-powered wheelchair for the kid.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Gary Busey's
totally didn't even know that was him.
Yep.
But he worked on a lot of DC and Marvel too, didn't he?
He did mostly DC stuff for, like, he kind of was their like regular horror art guy for a long time. But, you know, I mean, oddly enough, he did concept artwork for a couple of my favorite movies. He did concept artwork for Ghostbusters. He did concept art for, you know, oddly enough, actually Galaxy Quest as well, too.
Didn't he do the artwork for Heavy Metal, like the movie Heavy Metal?
He probably did. I know he did a lot of work for Heavy Metal. I don't know if he specifically did the movie.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he's, you know, Twitter and, you know, social media definitely expressed their feelings about it, because they were all really sad to see him go, because I mean, he was only 68 and he had brain cancer, right?
That's what I correct. Yeah, and he so. Kind of was forced to retire probably about 2 or 3 months ago, where he officially was like, you know, I can't do comics anymore. I can't go to cons and sign autographs and that kind of stuff. So he kind of was forced to shut it down a few months ago, but it still caught everybody totally by surprise, you know?
Yeah, I definitely didn't expect it, because I think he like retired what in January or like late last year, right?
Somewhere around there, like January something.
So yeah, but if you're into the horror or the monster genre, you would definitely know his stuff. You would definitely have seen it, and it's sad to see that we won't see any new art from him soon. What is your?
We also lost another legend, right? Didn't we?
We did, but before we get to that, I want to know Jeremy's like favorite work of Bernie's.
Favorite work, probably his Frankenstein stuff.
His Frankenstein stuff,
just because he did about 50 illustrations for a Frankenstein book, and he spent 7 years doing those 50 illustrations. So those are some insanely detailed and just beautiful, beautiful pieces.
But they are the most recognizable ones, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, we will miss you, Bernie Wrightson. I'm sure at certain cons there will be tributes to his work or whatnot that you could probably see at the Dallas Comic Show coming up. But yes, Jonathan Atterbury, we did lose a great iconic guy, and I think Marvin is upset, would you say?
Marvin?
No, he doesn't get the joke.
His cousin, Marvin Berry.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Ooh, wow. Oh,
this is why we're mediocrity. All right, sad news. Deliver it to us, John.
Well, Chuck Berry died just this weekend, right? It was Saturday?
He did, and we are very, very...
Well, who's Marvin Berry? Is that his actual brother?
You're cracking me up, buddy.
What are we talking about?
Jeremy, do you want to go handle this?
I'll let you do it.
So there's a little indie film called Back to the Future. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've seen it literally like twice in my entire life.
Oh, my God. You're killing me. But there's a scene where Michael J. Fox plays Johnny B. Goode at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, and he plays it with the electric guitar. And back in the 50s, nobody really heard that sound. So the band is led by Marvin Berry. So during his performance of Johnny B. Goode, he goes to the phone. And he goes, "Hey Chuck, you know that new sound you've been looking for? Listen to this."
It's like it's Marvin, your cousin Marvin Berry.
You know that new song?
All right. I think I vaguely remember that part. I remember the scene where you played the music, but I don't remember that little toss in.
Oh, my goodness. You're killing us.
Well, we lost Chuck Berry. Oh, man. It was such a bummer when I heard about that.
I think we all did. And, like, dude, the guy was 90 years old, and he was actually putting out an album, which the estate has said they are still going to release this year. It's his first album in 38 years. So I'm really excited to hear it.
I think the official cause of death was the medical cause is being old as balls.
Yeah, he was still.
I believe was the cause of death.
Yeah, well, he was still playing, right? Well, he had cancer. Did he have cancer? I'm trying to remember.
Well, so it was natural causes. That's what he died at 90 of just literally being old as fuck.
Well, he was basically still playing at the St. Louis place, right, in Missouri.
I don't know. I don't know if he was still playing or not. At least not regularly
or something like that. But yeah, I want to say he was, like, as of recently. But yeah, he was working on a new album, first one in 38 years. And he's had a very interesting life. He's been in prison. He's been on top of the world. He's played with the best artists, and even the Beatles and Rolling Stones. Or I think the famous quote from John Lennon said, like, if they were to rename rock and roll, they would probably call it Chuck Berry. Because he probably is the inventor of – that is a quote from John Lennon. And I would agree with that.
It's absolutely true that he's the father of rock and roll, man.
And, you know, a lot of people say the king of rock and roll is Elvis. But I would say Chuck Berry, because Chuck Berry, I mean – He gave us like the rock stance, the power guitar rock stance.
You wouldn't even have Elvis without Chuck Berry.
Very, very true. And then, like, you know, Chuck Berry, he only had one hit single, right? Like number one hit single. And I think it was like My Ding-a-ling or something like that, which is weird because like every one of his songs is amazing.
Well, it's just amazing when you look at the legacy that guy, the impact on music and American culture really that Chuck Berry had. Because without Chuck Berry, you wouldn't have the Beatles, you wouldn't have the Rolling Stones, you wouldn't have Elvis, you wouldn't have like the most quintessential rock type artist that you can imagine. You wouldn't have any of those guys.
Well, one of the reasons why Chuck Berry became so popular with everybody was because the Beatles started covering his songs really early in their career. And I think that really like exploded him to really top fame. And then he started doing, you know, all the, you know, because he was always an older guy performing, but all the songs basically revolve around teenage romance or, you know, after school activity, you know, something like that.
So, cars and stuff like that.
Yeah. And he loved cars too.
Do you guys have any memories about Chuck Berry or any experiences with his songs that you can share?
Yes. I do.
Let's hear it, Brian.
Well, the first one that comes to mind, my wedding song was that I danced to was You Never Can Tell by Chuck Berry, which started out
Pulp Fiction.
It started out as Pulp Fiction, but 10 seconds into it, it went into a full swing routine that was choreographed.
So, oh, nice.
But I love Chuck Berry, like Johnny Be Good and Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll. Maybelline, they're all... I never got to see him in concert. I mean, even like, you know, I love the movie Howard the Duck. And like when he does the duck walk, you know, that's like, that is Chuck Berry. It's just so good. those are my memories. What about you, Jeremy?
Nothing really in particular for me. Just kind of as I started getting into blues, you know, and just kind of reading up and looking around, you know, it's like eventually it all, you know, it kind of leads you back to that era of like where you had Chuck Berry and Muddy Waters and those guys. So I kind of found a lot of those dudes at the same time. So that's really my only kind of specific, you know, memory of Chuck Berry.
Yeah, he's good. What about you, John?
Right. Well, I think some of my favorite Chuck Berry memories are covering his songs like in some of the various bands that I've been in throughout the years. I think even Jeremy and I, when we were playing at the sushi band, I think we used to cover like Johnny B. Goode and Maybelline and stuff like that every now and then. And not that it's a memory, but literally the first song I ever heard in my life. When I was born, my dad, the first time he held me, he sang Johnny Be Good to me, and that's on video. So that was the first piece of music that I ever got to hear in my life.
So you like him. Were you named after Johnny Be Good?
No, he was not my namesake.
He's not your namesake. Okay. Well, you look like the guy.
I look like Chuck Berry?
Yeah.
Only from the waist down, my friend.
There you go, but he's interesting. He was an interesting character. Like I said, he was in prison. He had a lot of scandals before there were like real scandals. But he was, and he was notorious for touring by himself, showing up and hoping that local talent would come play his stuff without knowing what set they're going to play. And he would ask to be paid in cash, like everywhere. So he was like notorious to like be like a pain in the ass to book.
Well, that was part of his rules though, because if you booked him, what you had to do was part of the guarantee was that you paid him up front and he would go up there and the band would have to already know all of his songs. So then he could just say, I want to play Johnny B. Goode or Maybelline or whatever. And then the band would just be able to keep up. And if he went there and the band couldn't hang, he would just walk off the stage and keep the money.
Yep. Yep. That is what he did. And one of the reasons he did that was so he didn't have to pay taxes. So he had to pay like a huge tax evasion thing at one point in time. So, but yeah, that is, I think they covered that in one of the Ocean's 12 or some 13 movies where Don Cheadle dressed up as like the stunt man is like, pay me my money in cash. So that was a little ode to Chuck Berry, but he's been in our lives. He was good. And like we said, like he was a big part of Back to the Future because what other way to,
and who was it that played him in Cadillac Records?
Mos Def.
That's right. Yep. And I thought that was, I liked that movie Cadillac Records. And I feel
that was
like
a very good movie.
Yeah. Mos Def did a really cool job portraying Chuck there.
And if you've never seen the documentary Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, directed by Taylor Hackford, it's a documentary on Chuck Berry, and it's like a concert film for one of his big birthdays. And like Keith Richards plays on guitar, and Etta James is there, and there's just tons of people who play with him. But they also go into his personal life, and he, like I said, he did collect cars, and he was an interesting cat. But if you've never seen it, seriously, check it out. It is awesome. You'll really like it. But yeah, we lost him too. So we will hopefully get a copy of the new album, and we'll be back to talk Chuck Berry and his new music. Sound good?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. All right. Let's move on to the new TV series, Iron Fist. Which has gotten pretty terrible reviews. And I have to say that I have not seen any of it yet. But I'm going to go to you guys if you've seen it and tell our our excellent listeners and fans if they should watch it or not.
Jeremy, what do you think of the show so far?
I actually watched the whole thing, and it was actually pretty good. The nice thing about it is, like, all of the Marvel TV shows on Netflix, each one is totally different. Like, when you watch Daredevil's got a different vibe than Jessica Jones and, you know, Luke Cage. This is basically its own show, no different than those are. So I feel like if a lot of people are going into it wanting, like, you know, the hardcore kind of, like, violence and, you know, that you're going to get with the whole Daredevil Punisher stuff, it definitely is, you know, is not that. But I still really enjoyed it. It ended up being pretty good. It's the other thing is, a lot of the Marvel shows can be kind of slow at times, and usually, like, in the middle, you know, they don't, most of them don't really need to be 13 episodes, because these are all, like, kind of, you know, B-tier characters that with Daredevil and Punisher, and then, like, all the rest of them are, like, C- and D-tier characters, like, on a good day, so getting 13 hours of material for these characters is tough. But Iron Fist was different, because in the beginning, it was basically slow in the beginning, and then once episode 6, like, you get past there, that's when it picks up, and then it's just kind of full speed ahead on the story from that point on, which I could see why a lot of people thought it was slow that were reviewers, because I think the reviewers only got the first 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of kind of story and character buildup, like, that you get through those first 6, so they get all that out of the way, and then it's just kind of full going after that.
So you recommend it?
Yeah, I liked it. It was pretty good.
Now, where in the Marvel Universe does Iron Fist take place?
Takes place, he is in New York City. I'm assuming he'll hook up with Luke Cage at some point. That's typically where you see him, is hanging out with Luke Cage in the comics.
Okay.
But he trained in a city called Kunlun, which exists in another dimension.
All right. Now, is he going to be part of the big Marvel Cinematic Universe on television and in film, or just television?
No, the Marvel Netflix dudes are not really going to cross over with any of the movie stuff from what they've said so far.
Because that would be cool to see Daredevil come into play, but I guess that won't happen.
Yeah, it would be awesome, but like Kevin Feige talked about it, and he said that, like, just getting Black Panther into the Captain America movie took so much screen time that they don't want to do it unless there's, like, really, like, a big story reason to have it. They don't want those guys to, like, pop up and then fight for 15 seconds and then hop off the screen. Because for him, that's distracting, and it kind of pulls you out of the story.
Yeah. All right.
But they did wrap the Defenders show for filming, so we're going to get that, I think, late summer or early September.
And Iron Fist is part of that, right?
He is.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to that one. It'll be good to see kind of like a like you said, like a B movie Avengers type thing for Netflix.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
I've only seen one episode of Iron Fist so far. I watched literally the first episode last night, and it was so boring. Oh my God. So I will say right now that I am, all in all, I'm a big fan of all of the Marvel Netflix shows, but they have got to work on improving the first half of each season, because so far, like, the first half of the first season of Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and now Iron Fist, they are all so boring. But then the second half is usually really good and really entertaining. But it's always something I have to, like, push through the first 6 episodes or so. So as you said, like, by episode 6, it gets good. That's been my experience with all those shows so far.
So I thought,
yeah, see, for me they lag in the middle. It's always like, I'm like, look, just cut out, like, the middle. Give me the beginning. Give me the setup. Show me everybody. Cut out the middle, and then let's just go right to the ass kicking at the end.
So you think you can do it?
I just felt like in Iron Fist. This first episode, it was kind of like purgatory. Like, I felt like, or Groundhog's Day. I felt I was experiencing the same exact moment over and over and over, when he's like, hey guys, it's me, and nobody believes him. And it's just like an hour-long episode of that scene done over and over. Mm-hmm. It was getting a little bit on my nerves.
My goodness.
But I'll still watch it, because I'm sure that the second half is phenomenal. I don't have any doubt about that.
Well.
But the first episode wasn't good.
No. So, yeah, I do want to see it. I want to give it a chance. I love Daredevil. So we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully it's good. I mean, like you said, Jeremy, I would like to see maybe instead of like 13 episodes, you get like 5 episodes. So you're like, there's no, you know, filler in between, maybe even just in the first season, you know?
Well, I've heard that they already have shortened. The Defenders is not going to be 13 episodes. They've already shortened Defenders to 8 episodes.
Oh, that's, see, they're badass.
So, there we go.
And they probably just signed the deal and were like, all right, give us 13 episodes of each of these shows. And now that they've made them, they're like, okay, why don't we, you know. It'll be interesting because they're going to do Punisher after Defenders. So I'll be curious to see how many episodes of Punisher that we get if they do the 13 or if they keep it down to 8.
All right.
But luckily with Punisher, they've already set up his character, so we don't need a whole bunch of introduction. Mm-hmm. They can just go right into ass kicking.
Yep.
All right. That would be awesome. Just ass kicking for 8 hours. I like it. I'd watch it.
8 hours of Frank Castle killing people.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's what I'd like to see. Let's move on to some movie news, because we got 3 bits of movies to discuss. Let's start with The Batman, which is the upcoming Batman film starring Ben Affleck. It's going to come out supposedly in 2018 now. And at one point, Ben Affleck was signed on to direct the movie, and he dropped out as of like a month or so ago. So he's going to still produce. He's still going to act and be Batman. I guess now they have Matt Reeves to direct the film in Ben Affleck's place. Matt Reeves directed Cloverfield, and what else did he direct? He directed like a bunch of
The War of Planet of the Apes, I think, that's coming out this summer.
Yeah, he directed Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War of the Planet of the Apes, and he directed the U.S. version of Let the Right One Win, which is called Let Me In. He's worked a lot with J.J. Abrams. Matt Reeves is a good dude. I like his movies. And then I guess Chris Terrio wrote an script for the flick for this Batman movie. Chris Terrio wrote Argo and helped with the script of Batman vs. Superman, but I don't think he had too much to do with it, but he did win Argo. But now it looks like
they're tossing it.
Yeah, is now the Batman is being rewritten from scratch to allow Matt Reeves to fully have like a bunch of creative control, and I would imagine that Affleck is going to help in on that. So that's pretty interesting. So where do you want to see this Batman movie go? Like, I mean, considering what we know right now.
For me, I guess they need to kind of establish a little bit of stuff, because I feel like we got in Batman versus Superman, we got a Batman that already had a buttload of story told that's all, you know, kind of jaded and I guess it's really the only way to put it. So I'm curious to see like if they're going to give us a little bit of like how he got to that point, or if they're just going to pick it up from like where, if it's just going to, is it, does it pick up where Justice League ends? See, that's what I don't really know what they're going to be doing with it.
Cause we've seen them in Batman.
As Superman. Long as we don't have to see young Bruce Wayne falling into a bat cave. As long as you don't have to see that
the origin story
I'm
again.
I'm so tired of seeing that.
Yeah, I'm tired of seeing that too.
Everybody is tired of seeing that. But like, so because we've seen Batman, Ben Affleck's Batman in Batman vs. Superman, and a little bit in Suicide Squad already. So the next one will be Justice League. So it'll be interesting to see like a whole take. So like, we saw that, you know, Jared Leto's Joker in Suicide Squad. I know Jared Leto has expressed interest to be the Joker again in the Batman movie, but I guess they announced that Deathstroke will be one of the main villains in the Batman movie, which will be played by Joe Manganiello. Or Manganiello.
I heard that's actually maybe no longer the case.
Really?
Yeah, I heard that in the rewrite that they may be writing Deathstroke out.
Oh, all right. So yeah, see, no, we don't know for sure. I mean, it would be cool to see Deathstroke. I'd like to see, I guess, more of Jared Leto as the Joker, just because we didn't get a whole lot of him.
I'm good.
But he's like, I'm good. I didn't like that Joker at all.
We don't need it. We do not need another Batman. We don't need another Batman Joker movie.
Really?
Maybe later, but not for this one.
Okay. So who do you want to see besides Deathstroke? Because usually Batman has a few different people to fight.
Hey, I'm cool if the Deathstroke is a great choice. You know, you've got any of the other characters. You know, you could actually do...
Like a Riddler? Have another,
you could do a Riddler if you wanted to redo that. You could do a legit, you know, Catwoman, actually.
You didn't like Anne Hathaway?
I think it's time to revisit.
You didn't like Anne Hathaway as Catwoman?
No. I like her as Catwoman, but that Catwoman made no sense in that movie whatsoever.
I think it's time to revisit some of the characters like Mr. Freeze and the Riddler, you know, because we got those guys. And even the Penguin, we haven't seen the Penguin since DeVito.
It's going to be way difficult to replace a Danny DeVito Penguin like that. That's just harder than it will be to replace a Heath Ledger Joker.
Hey, you don't have to, though. Let's just get Danny DeVito and he can play it some more.
Seriously?
Look, that's a good idea.
Judy Dench was M in the Pierce Brosnan movies, and then when they switched over to Daniel Craig movies, she was still M. So I'm like, hey, if you can play M in two different sets of Bond movies, two different eras of Bond, you can get Danny DeVito to come back and play some more Penguin.
Yeah, but Penguin died, though.
And hell, the guy that played Alfred was in every movie up until Batman Begins, right?
But it's not like one big story. It's not like... it's not like Michael Keaton's Batman story transitions into this Batman, into the Christian Bale, and then into the Ben Affleck.
To see Frank Reynolds from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia to play the Penguin. It'll just be so funny. I wonder if he would do it. I would love to see that happen. Oh, my goodness.
I think any of those characters. I think really we just need to, it has to be a character that we haven't seen in a movie in a while. That's what I would like.
Yeah, I mean, if... Mr. Freeze, I would love to see the backlash on the internet if they announced that.
bring Arnold back, man.
Oh, my goodness.
See, for me, that this whole discussion is why Deathstroke's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Deathstroke's a great idea. But, you know, I feel like Bryan Cranston would make a really cool Mr. Freeze. I would absolutely sign up for that.
That's good. I like that.
We'll have to do some casting at another episode for Batman villains for the Batman movie, because I would like to see who we could cast as the Riddler or Mr. Freeze or Catwoman or any of them, really. So that would be pretty cool. But yeah, the Batman, it is coming out. They will be Matt Reeves will be in post-production for War of the Planet of the Apes until this summer. So after that, I think he'll focus on the Batman. So,
yeah, I don't see how we're getting a Batman movie in 2018.
I mean, if he does his stuff for War of the Planet of the Apes and he does like a month of press, and then he really has, and if he starts filming like, you know, in the fall, I would imagine if the Batman comes out late 2018, I think that away.
How long does it take him to write a script and then meet with actors?
I mean, he's got some actors probably cast already, but as far as being written, I would imagine that he's working on it now, or other people are working on it now. But I think after post-production is done, I think he will definitely... Wait. Oh, wait, you know what? Are we wrong? Production was delayed until 2018 as Reeves was tied up in post-production for War of the Planet of the Apes. So it actually might not start till early 2018 for the Batman. Huh.
That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah, as you read this, you're just like, okay, so this has been trying to happen for 3 years and nothing's happened, so this is already not off to a good start. Ugh. We just want a good Batman.
And the rewrites and
here
all that.
Here on Mediocrity, we read you the internet.
Yep.
So, well, we can hope for just more DC stuff that is better than the last two things they've put out. Here's hoping. So, until then, enjoy Lego Batman movie, because that's the only Batman you're getting until then.
The Nightwing movie will be out before the Batman movie.
Ah, Nightwing. I like Nightwing. That'll be good.
Directed by the guy that directed your Lego Batman movie.
Oh, really?
Really.
Ooh. All right. That I like that. The Lego Batman movie was, I think, Chris McKay. Yeah, Chris McKay. Good stuff. Awesome. Yeah, Nightwing movie. There you go. Look at that. Chris McKay works on Robot Chicken. That's basically what he does. So, all right, well, let's move on. Let's move on to the Tron movie. So, Tron Legacy came out several years ago, and it didn't do well at the box office. I mean, it did okay, but it wasn't that good. And then Disney made Tomorrowland, which was set in the future as well, and it was a huge flop. So now they've pretty much shelved the Tron, upcoming Tron movie. However, Disney is still trying to kick around the third Tron movie to come out, but there's nothing like in place yet, and they're trying to figure out where story to go with. So what have you guys heard about this?
I haven't heard anything about it.
Jeremy?
I just read that there was going to be a reboot on it.
Okay, so as of right now is what I've heard through the grapevine is that the director, Joseph Kosinski, who directed Tron Legacy, is coming back to direct it. And I guess it would take place mostly in the real world and not the digital video game world. And the Olivia Wilde's character Quora would be like a big focal point of the movie. So I guess Garrett Hedlund is still up for the role, as well as Jeff Bridges, but we'll see what really happens. You know, we don't. Nobody knows because it's kind of like a. It was going to be into production. It was going to do that, but then the futuristic movies started bombing, so they have shelved it. But now Disney still wants to do it because they think there's still money there. So I don't know. Did you
guys like Tron Legacy?
It was okay. It was all right.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was a really cool movie.
I
thought it was fun. I liked the visuals a lot. I didn't really, you know, I don't remember the first one well enough to be like, oh, yeah, that was a great Tron movie, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I like the movie. It's not great, and I guess like Shanghai Disneyland built a big Tron themed roller coaster, so it's gotten interest again. So I guess Disney's like, let's make another movie. So I mean,
people are totally on this roller coaster. Let's make another movie.
Yeah, seriously, that's what I think. That's what's going on because the last one's not making money, and like, I don't see why Disney has to throw $150 million at a movie. Why can't they spend $25 million and make a really good movie and it make money? So they don't need to spend the money to make it, is what I'm saying, or the amount of money that they'll probably throw at it, because they'll lose money.
Plus, Disney's not really into original ideas these days.
No, they are not, sir, because I have seen Beauty and the Beast and... but yeah, Tron. I'd see Tron again. I like Tron. I'd see it. I'm not opposed to it, but as I am to this next thing that we're going to talk about, which is a Matrix reboot. So, Warner Brothers. So, on BoomstickComics.com, I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we wrote that Warner Brothers was cooking up more Matrix movies. Back then, we thought they were going to be sequels, like with Keanu Reeves and the Wachowskis and all of that stuff. But now, as we come to see, is that the Wachowski siblings are not going to be involved. Keanu's not going to be involved. But they're looking at Michael B. Jordan, who was in Creed and The Wire and Fantastic Four, to be in. He's not signed on, but they're talking with him to be in like this franchise, this new franchise. So I've read rumors that it could be a young Morpheus story, which maybe, but do we really want that? I don't. What do you guys think about a Matrix reboot without Keanu Reeves or the Wachowski siblings?
Well, to me, it depends on if you want to do a reboot or so. A reboot is where they basically just retell the whole story from scratch. That's the one thing I absolutely don't want. You know, if they want to do like pick it up where it's, you know, like if the whole Neo thing is supposed to be a cycle or whatever, you know, if they want to have, you know, what was the actor? Michael B. Jordan, is that who it was you said?
Yeah,
Michael B. Jordan. If he's going to be like the next like version of Neo, I'm cool with something like that. But just a reboot where you're retelling the whole story over again, that's you know, I'm kind of out on that.
Well, so there's actually some news on that, which is that the writer has confirmed that it's not a reboot.
Okay.
So where'd you read that?
The writer has confirmed. I read that on, let's see, I was just...
I'm curious.
Checking it out. So I'm going to type in... Okay, so... The Matrix writer has this website called NME.com.
Okay.
Writer Zach Penn clarifies reports on Twitter. Zach Penn's Twitter account said, "All I can say at this point is that no one could or should reboot The Matrix. Can't comment yet except to say the words that reboot and remake were from an article. Let's stop responding to inaccurate news." He's probably talking about Boomstick Comics.
he might be. is it a remake nor a reboot?
Zach Penn has said that it is not a reboot. I think a lot of people are saying that it's actually going to be a prequel and that Michael B. Jordan may be cast as young Morpheus.
So that's what I just said. There's rumors going around that it could be young Morpheus. But then I said, Do we really want that?
No.
Okay, well, so after the Matrix movies, there was a collection of short animated film called The Animatrix, and it was stories in that universe, and it was really cool. There were tons of really cool stories. So Zach Penn, the guy you're talking about, also tweeted that people who know Animatrix in the comics understand. I mean, But not to have that vision of the Wachowskis would be terrible. Like those, I mean, I like the Wachowskis a lot. I mean, part two and part three are not.
I like them selectively.
I mean, yes. Well,
yes, you're right. What was the Jupiter Ascending? Maybe one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
I agree. So Jupiter is so terrible.
You can't say that Jupiter Ascending looked visually stunning. The acting in it wasn't that great because the script.
They made Channing Tatum a space dog. They made him a space dog person.
He's like rollerblading with his air rollerblades. No, it didn't. Yeah, that.
I wouldn't say it was visually stunning or that creative.
Yep.
Cloud Atlas was a badass fucking movie. That was a great movie.
I agree. So was Speed Racer. I really like Speed Racer as well. But I mean, to have this, like, because you know you're going into and you're like, The Matrix, it's got to have Keanu, it's got to have these people. So I don't know what to say, man. Like, I love The Matrix storylines. Part 2 and Part 3 are fun on like a Bad Boys 2 type of level where it's just like so stupid and ridiculous that I can, you know, handle it.
Part one is not stupid.
I said not part one. I said part two and three.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misheard you. I thought you said part one and two.
No, part two and three are terrible. But part one is like legend, like fucking like perfect film. Like that, it like deep meanings and depth and like awesome like milestones in filmmaking there.
Yeah, and then the second and third one, like you said, I just misheard you. The second and third one are just totally lost.
So it's going to be interesting to see this. But okay, so if it's a Morpheus reboot, because when we get introduced to Morpheus, I mean, we don't really get his backstory in any of the three movies other than like stories like, oh yeah, he found me or he was this. And I wonder how he became like the guy who he's known, you know, how he's known now. So it'll be, I don't know. I don't know. Do I want a Matrix movie? Another Matrix movie? No, just re-release the original in 4K. I'm actually seeing some of Zach Penn's tweets, and it like totally looks like he was calling me out on my Twitter comments. It totally does. Because one of us says, "How about just re-release the Matrix? Don't reboot it. You can't do better." So I was like, "Dude, it's like something I absolutely said." That's pretty funny. Jeremy, you're a fan of The Matrix, right? What do you think?
I'm not interested in a in a Morpheus story. Like, especially if I'm assuming that if they're going to do one movie, they're going to do three. I'm definitely not interested in a Morpheus trilogy.
Yeah, I agree too. If y'all have never seen the Animatrix, y'all should totally look that up and try to see all of those little shorts, because they're really good and it does explore the world a bit better of the Matrix. But with this, like when we saw in the third film where like literally Keanu Reeves and Neo came back like every time, like it was the same guy. I just don't know how they can do it again. I don't know. Just watch the original. It's good. We don't need to mess about with this. Why do it? Why do it? Well, instead, like, remake something good. I don't know.
Just don't even remake shit. I'm tired of remakes and reboots. Let's just get some new fucking material.
See, that's
it's crazy.
And that's what I love about, you know, film festivals, because you do get to see a lot of that. A lot of them, you know, a lot of them get to be put out, but like big studios like Disney or Warner Brothers are very scared to put stuff like that out, so they don't want to spend money on it and be a failure, whereas something like Matrix or something like Lion King or Beauty and the Beast already has a built-in audience, and they literally are remaking
it. No guts, no glory, man.
I am the first to know that a film company is a business. They need to make money, but you're also in the creative business. Look at, you know, Get Out, the movie Get Out. Like, that movie, first time director right there, and it has made tons of money. And a studio gave him $5 or $7 million to make it. And it was amazing. It's better than anything that's come out, basically. You know, Logan's awesome. We all knew Logan was finally going to be awesome. But yeah, I don't understand this reboot remake craze with virtually every studio. Because it's just...
Yeah. I love what Blumhouse is doing.
Yeah.
I think that they have the best formula for movie making currently, and they're just kicking ass with it. I love it.
It literally is giving your filmmakers between $5 and $10 million and have creative control. It's $5 or $10 million. Make an awesome genre film.
Yeah, and then even if they make 25 mil or 30, they're still cleaning house.
Yeah, but most of them are making like between 80 and... 150.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like such a great formula, and you're getting good creative content, and it's original content. That's why I love what they're doing.
Yeah, it's weird, because I think Warner Brothers really were onto something when they put out Lord of the Rings, because when they did that, they were taking a chance, basically. I mean, even though it was a big budget, but each movie made like $1 billion. And like same thing with Harry Potter. They're in the franchise business, but now you're just like, you're in like, okay, let's remake. I mean, Marvel does it too, or Sony or whatever, because we've seen Spider-Man 3 different times. You know, it's just, you know, I want to see Marvel's version for sure, but how many times do we need to reboot something? You know, just keep it going or make something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeremy, what's your favorite remake?
Besides new Ghostbusters movie.
I can't even think of a remake right off the top of my head that I've liked.
The best remake, I think, is John Carpenter's The Thing. That was a damn good remake, because the first one was from, I think, the 50s, 40s or 50s. It was black and white, but John Carpenter's The Thing was a pretty damn good remake. And, if you can call it a remake or a reboot, James Gunn and Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead from, like, 2003. You remember that one?
Yeah, that's true. That was a really good one.
That was a solid one. Like, did it have any of like the depth that the original George Romero did? No, but it was still a damn good one.
I thought 310 to Yuma with Russell Crowe was really good.
That damn good one.
And so was the one with Jeff Bridges. I forget the name of that one.
Oh, True Grit.
True Grit, yeah. True Grit was really good as a remake. So those were both excellent remakes.
Because you have top-tier talent going at it, too. But here, we don't have anything going yet. We have Zach Penn, really... I mean, what has Zach Penn really done that we know of? I mean, we know he did a lot of the X-Men stuff, like X-Men movies.
Which is not a great resume.
I mean, yeah, his big claim to fame... when he first started out in 1993 was Last Action Hero. That was his first thing into the Hollywood business. And then he did.
This sounds like a shame list more than a resume.
Well, he followed that up by PCU, which was an excellent comedy. And then he wrote the 1999 version of Inspector Gadget. And then he wrote Behind Enemy Lines, which I liked. And then he got into X-Men. He did the X-Men 2 story. He wrote Elektra. He wrote X-Men Last Stand. He wrote the 2008 Incredible Hulk movie. He did do the story for the Avengers, but he didn't write the screenplay. He came up with the story. He's doing Alphas, and he's working currently on Karate Kid 2 and Ready Player One, which Ready Player One looks really good. But I mean, it's interesting to see where he might go with this.
Yeah.
In Hollywood, you fail upwards, as Kevin Smith likes to say. You fail at something, you get a bigger, better project. So I'm very interested to see it. So we'll see. We will see. All right. So any other movie news y'all want to talk about? We've talked about Batman. We've talked about Matrix. And we've talked about Tron.
No, I got no other news.
All right. So, Jonathan, you had this fun idea. Why don't you bring our listeners in for it?
All right. So I thought it'd be really fun if we, the three of us, cast each other. So if we chose actors that if we were to, say, have a biography made about us and the story of our life, who would play us? So we each have been tasked with writing down who we think should play each other. And we're going to read those off for you guys.
I guess let us know if you agree or disagree. Now, when this topic was brought up, I replied back that you cannot choose two people for me because it's been done many times before.
Yeah, you said that John Lovitz and Ron Jeremy were off the list. And I think that was bullshit because you stole the thunder from the joke if one of us had wanted to use it. And you made it so we can't use them.
It makes you be more creative because I've heard that for the last 17 years
of my
life. But
the listeners haven't. It's not about for you. It's the fucking listeners, man.
You'd be surprised.
I know that we make up like 60% of our audience, but still.
That's true. All right. So I guess if you were in a cast meet, you would choose a cross between John Lovitz and Ron Jeremy?
No. I've actually chosen something else. But I want to hear, I think, Brian, let's hear what you've got for us.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So for Jeremy, I was trying to figure out a good person to go with Jeremy. Because Jeremy, he's funny, but, you know, he's a little quiet, but he's calm and collected and cool, but he has some really good jokes. And I think Breckenmeyer would play Jeremy really well.
I don't know who that is.
I have no idea who that is either.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
Swing and a miss.
Good job on the deep cut there, buddy.
Have y'all ever seen Franklin and Bash?
No.
Nope.
Do you remember the movie Road Trip with Sean William Scott and Tom Green?
Never saw it.
Vaguely, I remember when it came out. I never saw it either.
The Garfield movie with Bill Murray as Garfield. He was John.
Okay, I know who you're talking about.
He was also in Clueless, like way long ago.
Yeah, he was the guy with long hair and the skater in Clueless, right?
Yes. But I wasn't.
Not ringing any bells.
Look up Breckenmeyer. You would recognize him for sure. I thought everybody knew who Breckenmeyer was. Fuck me.
He's like the Tom Cruise of his generation.
Yes, he is. But he's funny, does comedy, and he's calm, collected, and cool, just like Jeremy is.
Okay.
All right. And for
right on.
I put some thought into Jonathan Atterbury. And I'm going to go with Neil Patrick Harris.
Why did you give me NPH? I'm curious to know.
Because I think, and like you have kind of a larger than life personality. and you're kind of you're loud, you laugh a lot, you can turn up the charm, you can like show your muscles, and you can be funny and like and be silly, and I think Neil Patrick Harris would be perfect for your role.
Okay, awesome, very cool. Jeremy, yeah. What you got?
I will start with John. Now, I figured that with this particular instance that we could go with any actor we wanted from any time period.
I concur with that.
So I opted for John William Shatner from the T.J. Hooker era.
Fantastic. Why?
I don't know. There's just always something about like that older like era of Shatner where it's just like there's always like, you know, the kind of twinkle and the smile, and that was just always like his thing. And I feel like that translates well for the Atterbury.
All right.
All righty.
And how about the Kluger?
Oh, I just opted to go with Mel Brooks.
Oh, fantastic.
Because I figure like at any age of Mel Brooks probably works just fine for Kluger.
That's true. Just a silly, silly
very nice
guy. I like it. Well, thank you. I like it.
I put a lot of thought into casting you two. It's such a challenge, you know, because you guys are both such unique people. So I'm going to start with Brian. You know, I really, first of all, you took away Ron Jeremy and John Lovitz. So I had to think outside the box. And I was tempted.
Okay, wait. So were either of those actually on your list? Were those potentials for you when he said no?
No, but as soon as he said that, I was like, oh my God, those are perfect. I can't say I would have arrived at those answers, but I'm just mad that they were taken away from me prematurely.
I mean, John Lovitz did play a movie critic on a TV show called The Critic.
Part of me was tempted to cast Nathan Lane as Brian. Another part of me wanted to cast Dom DeLuise as Brian Kluger. I wanted to cast Tim Burton's hair as Brian Kluger's.
As my hair?
But I just decided to go ahead and go with John Belushi.
Oh, fantastic. Because
you've got that bigger than life personality, and you've got a good laugh about you, and you're jolly. So I'm going to give you John Belushi, my friend.
I love that. I love that. Holy shit. I love it.
It's good.
I love it. I like it.
Now, Jeremy has a very unique charm about him. He's cool under pressure. And I was trying to think of somebody that also looked like Jeremy. And I'm going to go ahead and cast Don Knotts as Jeremy Meggert.
Wow, Don Knotts. Oh, my God. Don Knotts looks like Jeremy, really?
Okay, so here's my opinion. Don Knotts actually looks a lot more like Jeremy's dad. Jeremy looks an awful lot like his dad. So if we see Jeremy, I feel like, you know, when we look at Jeremy's dad, we're looking at an older version of Jeremy. So I'm going to say Don Knotts.
So can we remake The Ghost and Mr. Chicken with Jeremy?
Yeah, absolutely could. Or Mr. Limpet, you know?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
All right, but the secondary for Jeremy is I actually think a little bit more realistically, I would probably cast Keanu Reeves as Jeremy.
Ah. I'll take that.
That's a badass. Because
I think there's that mellowness about him, you know, and that cool under pressure thing.
He's part Bill and Ted and part like Neo or John Wick.
And we all know that Jeremy would go on a murder rampage if anyone killed his dog. So
it's very true.
Very true. And he would air guitar it like when he killed somebody like Ted Theodore Logan. That would be good. I like that. I would like to hear what our audience thinks, too, about who they would cast us as.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone in the audience knows what we look like, but, you know, we could post some visual aids here. Compare Jeremy to Don Knotts and Brian to John Belushi.
They took the bar! The whole fucking bar! Oh, I just want to do everything from Animal House right now. Next time I go to a buffet, I want to do that. Just like pile everything on a plate, start eating it there. Oh my goodness, I love it. I like it. That was fun. I do like it.
Yeah.
That is good. That was good. That we were all very nice to each other. I like it. All right.
And yeah. Except for maybe the Don Knotts thing.
Well, when I was like, look, I was like, Don Knotts looks like Jeremy? I never thought of that. I was like, it didn't look like Jeremy.
I'm gonna get a picture of Don Knotts, and I'm going to line it up next to Jeremy, and then we'll see what you think about it.
Okay. Sounds good. pretty funny. All right, so to our end this 32nd episode of Mediocrity, where you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio under Multimedia Men. Let's do our The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and Kevin Hart casting.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I'd like to see a film remake of The Andy Griffith Show. With Dwayne Johnson playing Andy Griffith and Kevin Hart playing Barney Fife.
Oh, all right. I could
sticking with the Don Knotts theme here.
you sure are, sir. What about you, Jeremy?
All right, so here's what I got. I want a sequel to The Rock's Hercules movie, because in that movie, we never really got the 100% definitive answer. Is he the half-son of Zeus, or is he not? And in the sequel, we find out that, yes, he is. And at the end of the movie, he gets to go and meet his father. He gets to meet Zeus, who will be played by Kevin Hart.
Oh, that's good.
I love that. I think that's a great idea.
I like that, too. So, one I would like to see would be the upcoming remake of The Lion King, where The Rock and Kevin Hart are Timon and Pumbaa.
I gotta admit, that is not the way I thought you were gonna go with that.
Did you think Mustafa and Simba?
Yes, I figured you were going that route, so I was not expecting Timon and Pumbaa.
Timon, how awesome would that be?
That would be incredible.
And it's coming like out. That could definitely happen. It could definitely happen. Let's market for that.
Hey, The Rock already sang in one Disney movie. He can do it again.
That's very true. He did. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, until next week, we are Mediocrity. We're going to have a good 33rd episode next week. We promise. Or it might be just mediocre, like it always is.
We'll read you the internet some more like we did today.
I like that. It was like getting up-to-date news. The internet
and make fun of each other. That's kind of that's
so the by the time is. You hear it, that news will be like 3 weeks old.
Yeah, maybe we can tease this for next week. Maybe all of us have to come up with the movie title that describes our sex life. So don't give anything away now, but maybe we could do that for next week, which would be fun. Maybe we could start off the show just with that.
All right,
cool. That'd be
funny. I think we should also come up with the titles for each other's sex lives.
Yes, very much so.
I think that's the secret right there.
Yeah, come up with it for everybody else's. Oh my god, so good. I like it. All right. Well, we're Mediocrity. Jeremy Magert, Jonathan Atterbury, and Brian Kluger. We are here. We are here every week. Subscribe to us. We love you.